Welcome to the Nerd Journey Podcast. Our goal is to help you, the technology professional, accelerate your career progression, increase your job satisfaction, and be more effective in your existing role.
We want to bring listeners like you the career advice we wish we'd been given earlier in our careers.
I'm John White at VJourneyman on Twitter, sharing co-host duties with Nick Cordy at NetworkNerd _.
We're two former IT operations guys who have moved on to pre-sales roles with technology vendors. We have our opinions, but we also like to highlight the journeys of others and see what we can learn from them.
We'd also like to ask for your feedback to make this a conversation, not a one-way broadcast. Email us at nerdjourneypodcast@gmail.com or DM us at nerdjourney on Twitter. So come join us on our nerd journey.
Let's take a trip. Episode 269 has just begun. And this week, we're sharing part three of our discussion with Eric Gross. He's a technologist, an entrepreneur, a career coach, and the co-founder of the Tech Academy. Each of our previous discussions with Eric has had a specific theme. In part one of our discussion with Eric in episode 267, it was all about learning the fundamentals of technology from his father, learning electronics and various systems as part of the nuclear engineering program in the Navy, and then as an instructor, learning the fundamentals of becoming a successful traveling salesman, and then also learning when the right time is to leave a job that just isn't the right fit anymore. In part two of our discussion with Eric in episode 268, it was all about ownership. How can the entrepreneur learn to own their decisions and the impact of those decisions beyond themselves? These kind of decisions can result in things like layoffs. And we talked through Eric's perspective on that from three different personas. And then we also heard the way Eric took ownership of his own career and made that full-on shift to becoming a paid software developer. This week in part three, we're going to dissect that shift a little bit more that Eric made to get into tech. He was able to combine skills he had and interests and passions he had to increase his overall earnings potential. But how can people like you and me figure out the thing or things that we should monetize? Eric's going to take us through something called the Most Valuable Knowledge Framework that I think will really help. We'll also talk through the genesis of the Tech Academy and why Eric chose to create the coding school that's been so successful over the last 10 years. And then we'll talk through how not all boot camps are created equal and what's the difference between a boot camp and attending a college or university. Let's catch the full story as we go to part three of our discussion with Eric Gross. You found the thing that you could monetize. Yeah. And that is actually something that you help people do now. So this is a perfect transition point to talk about that. For you, the thing to monetize was the technical skills, the technical knowledge. Yes, you had to sharpen them, but you already had a foundation from which to work. And you had some idea of how you learned. You just needed a perspective from someone else to tell you, oh, that's really valuable. I didn't realize you knew all those things. You should highlight those things on a resume and tell people about those things. And so it could be as simple for some of our listeners as they're just not highlighting the right things on a resume or talking to people about the things they have experience in.
Yeah, no, you're spot on.
If I don't know the thing I want to monetize, where do I start?
This is a very real problem that I lived through, clearly. Because if you flash back to, like, what is it now, 13 years ago, there were a lot of things I had knowledge about that I'd actually done. I was very accomplished at sales. I was a really good writer. I could manage people. I was really skilled at appliance repair, of all things, because I learned a lot of electromechanical repair in the Navy. Obviously, skilled at electrical assembly, right? Printed circuit boards, all that kind of stuff. I had these pockets of knowledge. We accumulate throughout life a lot of these. Some of them you might think of traditionally as these are money-making activities. Others, not so much. I was really good as a dungeon master. You're never going to get rich as a dungeon master. But the point is, I had this huge collection of like things I was either really knowledgeable in and or good at and had been paid to do. What I didn't know was the relative value of each of those pieces of information. As ludicrous as it sounds now, with everything I do to help people break into tech, back in 2011, I had no idea engineers made the kind of money we make. I literally didn't know that this thing I'd been sitting on for, at that point, decades was so valuable. Yeah, a little bit naive. I'm telling you what, by the way, the emotional curve when I got that call that said I got that job was about 3 minutes of absolute elation and then about a half an hour of, what have you been doing for the last 15 years? Why? Like, it took me a little bit to pull out of that and go, that's not going to help you. Stop beating yourself up. But here's the point is that I had all these things that were passions or areas of knowledge. What was lacking was, what are they worth on the market? So one of the things I do now to help knowledge workers of all sorts, but particularly in the technology space, is to help them figure out what their most valuable knowledge is. And it can be a very surprising journey. The basic pattern is really quite simple. Anyone can do this. You sit down in a nice, undistracted place, and you just start documenting all the things that you know about. Like, I've got skill in this area. I have deep knowledge in this area. I've studied or I've done it. Someone's paid me to do it or is currently paying me to do it. Like, write them down. And then separately, list everything that you're passionate and interested in. They might be related. They might not. You don't care at that point. You just want to list everything you're passionate and interested in. I like to joke that always number one on my list is the Roman Empire. Don't know why. But the point is, we've all got these passions and interests. And now you take those two things and you start putting them side by side and you're looking for relationships that you hadn't identified before. Maybe you're really, really super interested in, like, you have a passion for telling stories and you have a skill over here of audio recording and editing. And you've got another passion or interest in children and being a really good parent. You take these three things. This is a very real one, by the way, that a recent client went through. And when they looked at all those things that came together and they went, I could make a podcast where I tell kids stories. I can handle all the technology stuff on the back end. I can handle the creative endeavor and the pure joy of telling the story to my audience. And I've got this way I can monetize it with print books, and that way I can monetize it with sponsorships and. But they found a synergy there that they had not seen before. So once you've found those synergies, now you go out on the open market and you find out, okay, is this something anybody's even paying for? And there's a lot of different ways. It can be a lot of fun. But ultimately, all you're trying to find out is this intersection of passion and knowledge that I just found. Is anyone paying for that in any form out on the market? And when you find, it can be really surprising what you find, that people are, you've got a handful of what could be your most valuable knowledge. And now it's a simple sorting process of, okay, what has the greatest long-term potential? Which one do I have the most resources to start now? But you have a handful of actual monetizable intersections of passion and skill that can open up huge changes in your life. And that's, I'm realizing now, I love this conversation, by the way. That's actually what happened for me. I had this intersection. Look, you're so wise.
You're telling the story, not me.
I had this intersection of absolute passion for technology. Like, I'm super interested in this. Logic problems, I love this stuff. And I had deep existing skill in computers and programming and technology. So it wasn't just I'm interested in it, but don't know a lot about it. I've got both, baby. And the missing part was, because this wasn't true when I was a teenager. It wasn't true in the early 90s. And during the time period I was in the Navy, I didn't know what was going on with the industry. And after that, I was off selling things. I had no idea that after the dot-com bubble of the early 2000s, that there was a rebound and engineers are getting paid bank. Had no idea. So when it all came together, I went, oh, one, you're an idiot. You should have been doing this a long time ago. Two, let's get going, man. What do I have to do to break into this? So that's the kind of work we do with people. It's so fun to watch people, because then you got something that people will pay you for, that you're deeply interested in, and you happen to be skilled at. You've still got to build those chops as an entrepreneur, but at least you're starting from something that you already know is worth investing your time and energy into.
And just to clarify, I think what we're saying is that whether I am an existing business owner, entrepreneur, a would-be entrepreneur, or someone who has no interest in running my own business at any point, I can still do this exercise to help me in wherever I want to go to increase the monetization strategy of my holistic career, right?
Yeah, you're spot on. Like, I'll give you a practical example. I was working for a healthcare company in Oregon a long time ago, and we had these, it wasn't fully open air. People had little mini sort of cubicles. And one of these cubicles, the guy had a sign on the outside of the cubicle that had a picture of Optimus Prime.
I like this guy already.
Oh, yeah. And underneath it, it said Optimizer Prime. I was totally curious about it. So he and I struck up a friendship. I asked him about it. I'll make this part of the story really, really short. The technologists in the audience will fully understand the impact of this. There was a batch process that had to be run overnight that would consolidate all of the health and financial records that came in to the health company, healthcare company overnight and produce aggregated reports. Pretty simple. The query in structured query language, the database instruction to perform this, one, was about 350 lines long, and two, was taking more and more time to complete to the point where it was sometimes 6 or 7 hours and it would eat into the start of business the next day. It was a real problem. And he came in, he was relatively new at the time, he came in and for a week he disappeared into his little cubicle. And when he walked out, he had a SQL, you know, structured query language instruction that was 31 lines long and got the job done in 38 minutes.
That's amazing.
So talk about optimizing a query. And that's when they gave the nickname Optimizer Prime. So why do I bring this up? Well, here's the thing. Once I got to know him, I was curious as why he was still working there and why he was working in the area he's in. And the fact is, he had pigeonholed himself as he's only the SQL guy. He's only the database guy, and that's all he is. And he found out, it was a brief period of time when he was trying to put himself on the market and see what was going on, that that was not worth as much as he thought in the open market. So this sort of point of view, this idea of your most valuable knowledge, is just a useful thing for anyone to do, even if they're just looking to continue direct contribution as an individual contributor working their regular job. Because there's nothing wrong with that. Yes, I work with entrepreneurs. But yes, be really good at your individual job and make a lot of money doing it, right? But this exercise would have been phenomenal for him to go through to find out, okay, so that aspect is actually hurting me on the open market. What else do I have that I'm both actually interested in and really good that I can lead with? Because right now I'm leading with something that turns out is not as remunerative, as returning of money as I thought it was going to be. So yes, it absolutely can apply if you're going to stay in that individual job role. But when it comes to figuring out, you know, if you're entrepreneurially minded, man, I got to tell you, having the confidence and certainty that the idea that you have has legs before you spend a dime gives you a lot more confidence as an entrepreneur. I see people that do it backwards all the time. They pull in a bunch of investment and they design what they think is going to be worth something on the market. And then they launch it and it's a giant dud. Horrible experience. Don't do that. Figure it out ahead of time before you spend any money.
I think what you're really saying is line all these items out and build the right system that connects them.
Oddly enough, that's what I wrote out in my book.
Oh, okay. Well, let's go ahead and plug the book.
Yeah, I wrote a book called The Most Valuable Knowledge Workbook because I'd done this over and over again with people and refined it, right? And I went, okay, one, I don't want to have to keep explaining it each time. Two, it really works decently as a self-guided activity. Like with a lot of my clients, I'll just give them some of this instruction or guideline, have them go bang against it a little while, come back and we'll just go through what they come up with. And so I finally decided to just refine it into a book called The Most Valuable Knowledge Workbook, which is free. I just put it out there because I want to help people with it. And a certain portion of people that read through it are like, oh, I like this. Hey, Eric, can we work together? So yeah, it's The Most Valuable Knowledge Workbook. It's 40 pages of this exact thing laid down with a framework. And look, there are other approaches to this. It's not like I invented like human flight or something, but it is a proven workable framework for how to suss out what combination of passion and skill is actually worth enough on the open market that it justifies you moving forward. And how do you gain certainty on that before you embark on that journey?
Well, there's gaining certainty, there's embarking on the journey, but I think there's also this element of exhibiting expertise in this area. You know, if I have the right pieces, you mentioned the gentleman who was thinking about starting a podcast focused on parents and they knew the audio and technical back end.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to do that, at what point do you start to do in parallel or maybe front load this endeavor with evidence of expertise, and what should that look like?
I love this question. It actually stops a lot of would-be entrepreneurs because we all have this recognition or this understanding of the fact that you've got to demonstrate some sort of credibility. And when you have never done something for pay, put yourself out in the world and hung up your shingles, so to speak, how do you get that credibility? Well, there's a couple things that are kind of interesting in this regard. A lot of the times, the endeavor you're starting, it turns out that many of us have kind of been doing that casually on the side with our friends for years. When it comes to career coaching, I had a conversation with someone where it just suddenly hit me. I've been doing this for 10 years with my friends and loved ones on the side because I care about them. And each time it comes up that someone needs a little bit of help in their career, I now have a pattern of stuff I did with them. I went, oh. So I just called them up and got a testimonial because I've been doing that thing with them. So that's a very common approach. But the other one, it's quite easy. When you're launching this activity, it's totally worth it to do the first few deliveries of whatever product or service you're creating for free. Now, that flies in the face of certain people's attitudes. But the fact is, it's not for free. It's just a matter of what are you getting in exchange. It isn't money. Two things. It's validation that your approach is actually working. That feedback is incredibly valuable. And two, when it does work, you get testimonials and referrals. What are those worth? So that's not a brand new idea, but I do see often that people have the idea backwards that like, no, from minute one, I'm charging because my time and expertise is valuable. Racker, racker, racker. Well, that's true. And the people in your immediate circle know that that's true. But Joe Schmo, who finds you on Facebook or Indeed or whatever, that's not real to them yet. So yeah, the first few ones, do it for free. And then you get that testimonial and like, oh, now I've got credibility. That's the approach I take.
I love that. I'm really curious if you could tell us a little bit about the start of the Tech Academy, you know, the reasons behind you and Jack starting that, a little bit more about its mission and purpose, maybe how others can get involved in it, and, you know, how do you balance that with full-time work?
Yeah, the balance thing, that's, you get better and better at it. And it is a matter of like being willing to say no, but I'll talk about that more in a minute here. In terms of like where we even started with this thing, like you got to pay attention to these things. Because one day my son comes home from school and he had a computing class. I didn't want to push him on this, right? But I was interested in how he was enjoying it. And he comes home with this little sheet of paper and he says, Dad, I want to do a developer boot camp. To set the stage here, it's like March of 2013. As far as I know, and I know this industry pretty well, the very first boot camp called Dev Boot Camp started in the summer of 2012 down in the Bay Area. There may have been other like little things kind of like it, but the first thing that actually had any traction was Dev Boot Camp. And so now, 6 months later, I've never heard of this at all. And my son has a little sheet on it. And I read what they were doing, like intensive full-time training in all the practical skills needed to be a web developer, connect you with employers, all this stuff. I'm like, that's genius. And recognize at the time, this was a brand new idea. Now, 11 years removed, the bootcamp industry is a firm part of the technology landscape, but it wasn't then. So I figured out what this was. Like, oh, a bootcamp. And I went, wait a minute. I've been teaching technology for years. I've developed over the years an ability to break down complex technical concepts in a way that anyone can easily understand. I'm already trying to hire junior developers on the side for a lot of my contracts that I do for people and finding them really hard to get. I could do this. And so I did. And again, there's a whole story there, right? In fact, on the day we're recording this, this evening, we're having our 10-year anniversary. And so I got a whole presentation of like, thank you. The whole history, ups and downs of the school. But the short version is that as I applied what I know about most valuable knowledge and went, okay, let me see if the open market will actually pay for this. There's this company down there and that's fine. But I started talking to the recruiters I worked with all the time, to hiring managers, to other technologists. And like, would anybody ever even hire someone from one of these programs if it was well put together? And it turns out a lot of people were skeptical because it was brand new. But a lot of people were like, yeah, as long as they can do the job and are teachable, like I would be open to that. I went, oh, this has legs. And so we started to build it. I do want to mention one thing because it's such a vital lesson for the would-be entrepreneur. After I'd gotten that initial feedback, I'd validated the idea, I made a big mistake. I genuinely get a little bit emotional about this because I almost didn't do it. I almost didn't build the school. And it came about because I decided, oh, I wonder if anyone's actually doing something like this locally. I'm in Portland, Oregon. It's not the biggest tech mecca in the world, but so I look online It doesn't take long. There it is, Portland Code School. It had been around for 3 months already, and it destroyed me. I thought that there was no way that this small town could support two of these. And there was a period of about an hour where I just spun on this and almost abandoned the whole idea. I'm like, it's not too late to back out. I haven't done anything practical yet. I haven't like created a business. I didn't because I remembered something really important, which is something I go with all of my students, all of my clients. If no one is paying for the expertise that you have already, that's a bad sign. If there's no competition in the area you're going into, that's usually a bad sign. I went, oh, they're here. That means people are paying for it. And I decided to move ahead. Now you flash forward 10 years. We've had as many as 5 different code schools at various points in Portland. As of last month, there's only one standing, and that's us. Now, I don't say that like I feel genuinely bad about the others that didn't make it. Many of those people are my friends, but we're still here. And none of it would have happened. We wouldn't have had, like, we've literally got thousands of people into tech. It wouldn't have happened if I'd succumbed to that. So to jump forward, though, because there's another pivotal lesson here. Once I figured out, like sat down and sketched out what the whole thing would look like, what the curriculum would look like, how to have live projects so they can actually experience what it's like to be part of a team building software, how to partner up with different staffing firms and different companies, like a whole thing. I had it all sketched out and started to build it. And I'm working full time. And I went, wow, Eric, you got a problem. One, you're working full time. Two, you are not the executive capable of building this. You are not the establishment person. The person to build the systems and hire and put in policy, like that's not you. And I knew it. And I faced that truth about myself and went out and found a partner who had all of that. And oddly enough, it was my friend Jack, who a few years before had said, hey, Eric, let me hook you up with my friend who's in tech. And he has all those skills. And so we put in place a self-paced, yet instructor-supported methodology for breaking into tech as a well-rounded, entry-level, full-stack developer. Now, since then, we've added in 11 different programs, from artificial intelligence to data science, UI, UX, game development, Python, JavaScript, like C#, all of it, okay? But that was our mandate. It's like, how do we give someone the tools they need, not just to hear the modern technologies that people are going to hire them for, but have a solid enough foundation that as they go into tech, and inevitably, big shifts happen in technology, they can navigate those shifts because they have the foundation in place. And that's what we designed. And the full story of that would take, like I say, well, I've got a 2-hour presentation tonight to go over it. There's a lot there, but that's what we do. And we've been, like I said, we've been around for 10 years. In terms of getting involved, it's real easy. You just go to learncodinganywhere.com and there's everything about it.
We'll definitely put that link in the show notes. I guess I'm curious, if I am someone who is interested in going through a boot camp, from an expectation perspective, I should get practical experience, I should get abstract concept learning. Do you know if every boot camp out there or only specific types offer the connections to recruiters and hiring companies? Does that differ like across the industry?
Yeah, it does differ. It does differ a little bit. Like some have deep ties into the local community, some are a little more loose. That part of it varies. To address the earlier part of what you were talking about, though, like if you're a person that is looking at that, like what can you expect out of it? Well, I'll start with broad and then narrow down a little bit. Broadly, there's 3 routes into tech: self-study, boot camp, college or university. That's how you break into tech. First of all, the self-study route, I could talk about that a lot. That's a rough road, but it can be done. There's a lot of risk of you don't know if you're studying the right stuff, and there's a whole discussion we're going to have about that. But you can do it, absolutely. If you look at a boot camp versus college, there's 2 broad differences. The pros of a college approach or a university approach are that because you have a lot of time, you can cover a lot of ground and you can go deep on things that you don't have time for in a boot camp. One of the cons, and I used to be critical of this until I understood the factors behind it. One of the cons is it's very light in 2 areas: how current the technologies are that they teach, and how much practical experience you get with the way software is made in the modern world. Those 2 things are not very good in most programs. And again, it's not because they don't care. One of our closest supporters and allies and reviewer of all of our curriculum is the person who heads the computer science department at a local university. And he explained this to me. I finally understood. To get curriculum changes put in place at a modern university takes between 18 and 48 months. They cannot keep up with tech, like literally can't. It's not that they don't want to, they can't. This is a highly regulated area.
And then you've got to have someone who has the skills to teach it.
No, you're absolutely right. And that's the other part of it is they don't have the mechanism in place to put in a simulation of what the real world work environment is as part of a dev team or a QA team or a product design team or all these different roles. That's its own special beast to conquer. Having done it for years now, it's not easy to put in place a live project that is on real world software that helps people experience what it's actually like to go through a sprint, to be assigned a user story, to actually do the work on their own machine, to submit their code for review, to make any fixes, and to do a push through the various stages and get it out into production. Like, that's not easy to set up. And colleges were never built up around that model, and so they don't have it. So again, that's not to knock colleges, because what they can do, a bootcamp could never do. We cannot do a deep, deep, deep dive into data structures and algorithms and the math behind this and the how compilers actually work and how operating systems work. We can't do that. But on the flip side, in a bootcamp, you can get the practical skills that are needed on the ground right now in 3 to 6 months and get a job paying $60,000 a year and then keep learning if you want to. And you kind of have to in this industry, as we both know, right?
Sure.
So the pros and cons there are that obviously the speed is much faster at a boot camp, but the cons are we can't go as deep. And this is why it's so important for someone looking at that option of a boot camp to look very carefully at how much attention has been placed on the long-term success of the student. I bring this up from, we learned this very painfully. We watched a competitor concentrate fully and wholly on Ruby on Rails. That's all they taught in their boot camp. And for a while, they were doing gangbusters business because in Portland at that time, there were a number of shops that really loved Ruby on Rails until a year and a half later when they didn't. And the people who had gone through that program were left out in the cold and found it very hard, with a certain few exceptions, but most of them had a really hard time getting a different job because what wasn't laid down was the fundamentals of programs. And this is where the Navy, like all those, it's all built over time. The Navy laid in the fundamental principles so well because they knew when you got out to the field on a ship, they couldn't predict what you were going to encounter. You had to be rock solid in the fundamentals of engineering and science and digital circuitry. So whatever you do encounter, you can figure out how it works rapidly and fix it when it breaks so the people don't die. It's the truth. You know, you're in the military. So when we took that and designed the first few courses of our curriculum, this is really weird. You don't start coding on our program until you're done with about 80 hours of instruction. A lot of programs you're coding day one, but you don't even know what a computer is. You don't know what digital is versus analog. You don't know what a CPU is, what instruction sets are, what runtime is, how a clock works, right? All the things that this physical machine are doing to make your pretty little JavaScript code actually do something, it's all a mystery to you. Now, it isn't to an experienced technologist. We glean that information over time, but imagine, again, you said it so well earlier, putting yourself back in the shoes of that initial learner. They don't know any of that stuff. And so they're writing if-then statements and building control functions and trying to build functions with parameters passed in. And they don't have any faintest clue what's going on under the hood. So among many other things, we clear all that up. And then they write their first code. And when they do so, they're like, oh, I know that when I compile this, I know what compiling is. I know it's being translated into something that CPU can actually execute for this OS, this physical platform. And that's why it's able to communicate through the buses and out the display ports and put something on the screen or send something over the internet. They know all that minute one. And all that anxiety and worry about, can I really make it as an engineer? Can I learn coding? That's gone by the time they're done with the first course.
Oh, I love that. And is this something, the bootcamp approach, is that something that a career changer could potentially leverage as well?
I love that you asked this question because it's something that really surprised us. We initially thought that the vast majority of our clientele was going to be young folks, maybe a little bit of college, maybe a little not, maybe a little junior college, maybe not. Maybe worked as a barista or something for a little while, and they're just trying to figure out, okay, what am I going to do? Tech seems awesome. We thought that would be the vast majority of our clientele. And I can tell you, as a person in his 40s, I interviewed a lot of people who were young to find out where their head was at because I wanted to, what matters to them, right? What shocked us is that a huge portion of our enrollments started to come from people over 40. Who were looking for that career change. I'll never forget the first time that happened. Jack and I did the everything to begin with. It was just us. So we did all the promotion marketing, all the website design, all the curriculum design, and all of the enrollments, all the signups. So we interviewed everyone for the first year or so that came through that school. And I was sitting there with a plumber who was considering going to tech. And it turned out one of his biggest worries was he'd been doing plumbing for a while, and he was making $60,000 a year as a plumber. It's not bad money. It's not great money. It is whatever it is. Obviously, cost of living varies. But he said, I just got a life situation where I cannot afford to go backwards. So I need to know that if I do this and apply myself, I've got the potential at least to maybe take a tiny pay cut, but move up from there. And that's when it hit us. For a lot of careers, technology is so well paying that you're not going to have to take a pay cut to make that shift. And that isn't true for a lot of areas. So in 3 to 6 months, you can shift over to a new career and you're not necessarily going to have to take a pay cut. But what really shocked us was that those folks were getting higher initial offers than the young folks, not because of age, but because they had time out in the business world. They knew what it was to operate in that environment and to be part of a collaborative team and, you know, deal with modern tool sets. And they had deep experience in certain business domains. And so they did really well in their interviews and they were getting higher, you know, offers. So absolutely a boot camp, whether it's ours or anybody else's, perfect for a career change.
Okay, good. I'm glad we made that delineation because I was thinking it was certainly an option for people out there. So if you want to get into software development, maybe a boot camp is a way to go. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time here, Eric. Such a great conversation. Honestly, I could talk to you for 2 or 3 more hours, but
I was about to say that I could do that, but the fact is you helped me spot a few things that I didn't even know. So I'd go on record and say, hey, let's spend 8 hours, but I'll probably have to pay you.
Yeah, pricing and packaging to come on that one. If people want to follow up on this conversation, where can they find you?
That's 2 things. If you're looking at anything in terms of monetizing your valuable knowledge, taking your expertise as a knowledge worker, a technologist or whatever, and figuring out how to build that into a scalable business where you're no longer trading hours for dollars, then go to yourcareerarchitect.com. That's where you find everything about who I am, what I do in that world. If you're looking at that bootcamp arena, go to learncodinganywhere.com. So those are the 2 sort of sectors that I operate in.
All right. We'll make sure to get those in the show notes. And thanks again for taking the time. We really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you so much for this. I honestly enjoyed this a lot.
Likewise. Whether you're a long-time listener or a first-time listener, if you enjoyed this discussion with Eric and gained some value from it, we kindly ask that you rate the show 5 stars, write us a review, and share what you liked and found helpful in this episode with a friend. We really appreciate your help getting more people on this journey with us. A big congratulations to the Tech Academy on 10 years of getting people into tech. That's an accomplishment to be tremendously proud of. And I don't know about you, but it was not a surprise to me that their curriculum focuses on the fundamentals. I love the approach to balance the abstract thinking skills with the concrete learning and marrying those two together so that the concepts start to make a lot more sense. I had not heard of the Most Valuable Knowledge Framework before this discussion with Eric. But I love the fact that it's something any of us can do to gain insight and validate whether taking a specific action is a good idea or seeking to monetize something specifically is a good idea. It sounds like a much more refined version of what we heard called the area of destiny in episode 20. So it's the intersection of interests, skills, and market demand. I love the idea of really quantifying the value of whatever combination of skills and interests that we've come up with, and then stack ranking those, putting them in order, which things are the most valuable, and maybe which of them should we lead with when looking for a new job or trying to break into a slightly different type of job. I would also say to marry this advice with the advice we heard from John Nicholson in episode 225, he was sharing a manager's perspective on looking at skills on a resume and seeing specific skills as expensive. So if it's not relevant experience and interest, maybe you don't need to put it on your resume at all because it could be seen as expensive. Put the things that are part of your most valuable knowledge on your resume for the required experience a hiring manager is looking for the job that you really want. The discussion of building expertise that we had in that episode and doing the first few iterations of something for free reminded me of episode 163 with Louise Bunyan and the story of Louise bartering with someone so that she could get horseback riding lessons. She provided digital marketing services. No money changed hands in that case. Just like Eric talked about, it might not be for money specifically. It might be something else you get in return. And I'll say this, listeners, any experience you gain, even if you do it without cash payment, is experience you can put on a resume. Maybe that's the only reason you're doing it, is to get that experience that it can oftentimes be so hard to get in our industry when we don't have it and an employer wants it. So I think doing something just to get the experience doing it, and then as Eric said, have someone give you a referral, a testimonial, maybe a recommendation on LinkedIn, for example, about the work you did for someone, that's extremely valuable. And then as you build expertise, just like Eric did, you're going to notice gaps. What are the gaps in the expertise I need and want to have? So some of those gaps you're going to be able to fill by building up skills and learning more. Other gaps that you have may be that you need a person to work with you who has some of the skills that you don't. So if you're a hiring manager or business owner, what are the gaps you have that you can fill with other people's skills instead of maybe having to skill up as much in that specific area? So that's another way of filling those gaps and blind spots. I hope you enjoyed this discussion. And if you need a coach, I'm sure Eric would take you on as a client. Feel free to follow the links to Eric's websites and follow up with him on this episode. Catch you later.
Farewell, listeners. Tune in next time as the journey continues. I'm John White at B Journeyman, for Nick Cordy at Network Nerd _, signing off.
Adios.